Today is July 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio in Washington. Coming up, a surprise shakeup at the White House. Meantime, President Trump selecting his nominee for Russian ambassador, a man with experience as a top U.S. envoy.
He will bring to the job what I would call a mainstream Republic view, which is an appropriate wary skepticism of Russia.
Also ahead, understanding the O.J. Simpson parole hearing and the Grammy Award-winning rock band Imagine Dragons is heading to North America. It's all on today's International Edition. And our lead story is breaking news coming out of the White House. We have a shakeup going on, and over at the White House right now is Steve Herman, who is in the press briefing room right now at the White House, standing inside there. And Steve, what have you got going on over there?
Well, Philip, I am literally standing on the podium in the James Brady press briefing room here in the West Wing of the White House, where in little less than an hour, the principal deputy press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, is going to come out and almost certainly announce that her boss, Sean Spicer, is resigning. His resignation comes just after word was received, spread through the West Wing here, that Anthony Scaramucci, a financier known to be someone that the president likes seeing on TV, is to become the White House communications director. Now, Spicer had been acting in that role for a while, but effectively Scaramucci would become Spicer's new boss, knocking him down a rung, and that was something that Spicer wasn't happy with. And we know that other people in the West Wing and the press office were not thrilled with the prospect of Scaramucci coming in as well, so we may be hearing of some other resignations today, but quite a dramatic few hours here at the White House today. Definitely the biggest shakeup of the first 6 months of this administration.
Well, it's interesting, Steve, because I think when Sean Spicer was moved out of the position as the spokesperson over there, some people thought that perhaps it was going to be a promotion, he was going to be moved up. Was that what you were hearing previously before this has happened today?
Well, there obviously had been some discussion along those lines, because Spicer had essentially disappeared from doing the briefings most of the time, and Sanders moved more into that role. But what this appears to be is a resignation on some kind of principle, not being happy with Scaramucci moving into the role. Some people here feel he's really not the right fit for what is a very intense job of doing a lot of things behind the scenes, of actually organizing the office. There is a long line of reporters waiting to get back into what we call the upper press area. When the word of this came down, they were told to vacate that area that's a part of the West Wing that we usually have access to, and we know that there are some people pretty emotional about this right now that are very loyal to Spicer, perhaps allied with Renz Priebus, the White House chief of staff, that they're sort of loyalists that had experience with the Republican National Committee. So this is just a further emphasis of the sort of splits we're beginning to see in the White House. For example, the highly publicized dissing by the president in the past couple of days of his attorney general, who heads the Justice Department, former senator from Alabama, Jeff Sessions. Now, will this stabilize after with this move of Scaramucci coming in, or is this the beginning of perhaps an avalanche of more rocks coming loose here? We just don't know yet.
Well, it is fascinating, and I know it's awfully busy over there, but Steve Herman, thanks a lot for giving us this update on the press secretary resignation. And Steve Herman at the White House. And continuing on with this story, we've got to head into our social media aspect of the program, because we've got Andrew Bocheski in here, and this has obviously got to be tweeting left and right now. What are you seeing?
You know, it started out earlier today with the talk about Anthony Scaramucci coming on as communications director, and then within minutes of that talk, we had this announcement breaking on social media. Lots of talk about the reasons behind this. Always see this kind of stuff in Washington, kind of reading the tea leaves. Was Sean Spicer actually fired? Did he actually resign because of this disagreement, or was he told to resign or be fired? Or was he done in maybe by the pressure? Had it been building for a number of months, and this was kind of the breaking point? A lot of people noting that Sean Spicer became one of these people in the administration as one of the public faces who took a lot of the heat and a lot of the jokes made at the expense of the administration. A lot of people pointing out the parody by actress Melissa McCarthy on Saturday Night Live, which was a big trending topic, got a lot of attention on social media. So people wondering what these factors had to do with this resignation, how they came into play as he made this announcement this morning.
Well, it's fascinating because whoever steps in to take this job, this is not your normal everyday president. He's quite unique from any other president we've had. So it's a tough job no matter who ends up taking it.
It is, and that's part of the problem and the issue that people said might have contributed to his resignation, having to go out there and talk about different things that maybe he didn't believe in or didn't have strong convictions about, that the president was very persistent about him discussing or focusing on. And again, this idea of parody and jokes, I mean, it is a tough job to be up there, and in this administration, which is getting a lot of criticism through the late night talk shows, through the comedy shows, Sean Spicer was had the brunt of a lot of that. So people wondering that now, if that had a role to play. Even now, after Sean Spicer's resignation, people still making jokes at his expense, talking about his greatest hits as press secretary, for everything from the crowd sizes at the inauguration, which was one of the first moments where people really started to hone in on some of the things that this White House was saying and make fun of some of those things, to other instances along the way. So lots of jokes still being made at his expense, but lots of other people saying, thank goodness for Sean Spicer leaving. He's finally free. He can go out and do what he wants. He's away from that White House, and he can go back to a degree of normalcy. So he is getting some praise for this move today. But as Steve said, too, there's a lot of people, Sean Spicer loyalists, not just there in the White House, but across the internet, who are sad to see him go, too. People said that they are really supporting him and sad that he made this decision to resign.
Fascinating story today, absolutely.
It is. Whoever said Fridays were a slow day, they've never spent a Friday in Washington.
Well, not with this administration.
Not with this administration, and not with the times in which we live, and not with social media, certainly.
All right, Andrew Belcheski, thank you very much for
thank
that.
You.
And on we go. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Among the top stories in the world, North Korea snubbing South Korea's attempts to talk. Supporters of the late Chinese Nobel laureate step up pressure on China to free his widow. And a teen is killed in Venezuela's anti-government protests, bringing the death toll there to 100. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said on Friday that the United States was satisfied with Qatar's efforts to implement an agreement aimed at combating terror financing and urged Arab states to lift a land blockade on the tiny Gulf nation. Last month, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt imposed sanctions on Qatar, accusing it of financing extremist groups and allying it with the Arab Gulf states' arch-foe Iran. Qatar denies the allegations. Now, while meeting with the foreign minister of Oman today at the State Department, Tillerson said that he thinks things are moving forward with regard to the memorandum of understanding among the five countries.
Well, I think as a follow-on to our trip over there last week, there has been some, I think, positive movement. The Qataris have continued to move forward on the MOU that the U.S. and Qatar entered into to address many of the terrorism, terror financing, counterterrorism concerns that people have, and they have been very aggressive in implementing that agreement. So I think we're satisfied with the effort they're putting forth. I think they also have indicated a willingness to sit with the four parties and negotiate, discuss the demands. I think they have indicated they think it's important that the sovereignty and dignity of all five countries be respected in those discussions. And so what I hope the four countries will consider as a sign of good faith, lifting this land blockade, which is really having the most, negative effects on the Qatari people. And that would be a good sign if the four countries would do that. I'm hopeful they'll consider that seriously.
Tillerson's shuttle between Gulf countries last week to convince them to ease the worst regional dispute in years, but left the region without any firm signs the feud would be resolved soon. Now, the four countries made 13 demands of Qatar, including shutting down a Turkish military base and the Al Jazeera Pan-Arab television network, which Doha has rejected. Now, in a move to counter the four states' accusations, Qatar has set rules for defining terrorism, freezing funding and terrorism financing, and the established national terrorism lists. In one of the first positive signs from the four Arab states since they imposed the sanctions last month, the United Arab Emirates on Friday today welcomed Qatar's decision to amend its anti-terrorism laws. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump has nominated his top envoy in Russia, John Huntsman, a Republican who served as a U.S. ambassador to Singapore during the first Bush administration and was elected twice as governor of Utah. In 2011, he resigned from his post in Beijing to enter the race for the Republican presidential nomination, but soon dropped out. VOA's Lattice Ahok has more about Trump's nominee for a high-profile diplomatic post.
How are you doing? During his brief bid for Republican presidential nomination, Huntsman was forced to defend his service as ambassador in China under a Democrat-led administration.
Yes, under a Democrat. Like my two sons are doing in the United States Navy, they're not asking what political affiliation the president is. I want to be very clear with the people here in New Hampshire in this country. I will always put my country first.
Trump was critical of Huntsman's diplomatic service, accusing him in a 2012 tweet of giving away our country to China. During last year's presidential campaign, Huntsman withdrew his initial support for Trump after the release of a video in which the Republican candidate made offensive remarks about women. But after Trump won the election, Huntsman defended the president-elect's decision to accept a congratulatory phone call from Taiwan's president, which infuriated China.
We have a lot of interests in our relationship with Taiwan. We share values. We have a large trading relationship. We don't talk nearly enough. So the fact that at this point, before he's president, he would take the call, I think that's okay.
Stephen Pfeiffer, an analyst at the Brookings Institution, told VOA that Huntsman is a good choice because of his significant foreign policy experience.
He will bring to the job what I would call a mainstream republic view, which is an appropriate wary skepticism of Russia. That doesn't mean he won't be able to engage with Russia, but I think he's going to go to Moscow with his eyes open.
Huntsman's appointment has to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. If approved, he will head for Moscow at a time when both Congress and a special counsel investigate whether Trump and his team had ties to Russia during the presidential campaign. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Well, after 9 years in prison, O.J. Simpson's been granted parole after serving time for armed robbery and kidnapping. Now, if you recall, the Hall of Fame athlete was acquitted at the conclusion of a sensational murder trial back in the 1990s. Now, before the parole board yesterday, Simpson said that he remained on good behavior while imprisoned on the more recent convictions, and he told the court that he wants to be released so he can be with his family. VOA's Lori London talks with Los Angeles criminal defense attorney Lisa Houlet, a former longtime L.A. County prosecutor, to get her observation of the hearing.
I predicted a few weeks ago that ultimately his parole would be granted. I think the most notable thing about the process was how much Mr. Simpson talked, especially in response to some questions where perhaps he should have been a little less wordy. But ultimately, I think that the hearing officers already had their minds made up before today, and for the most part, this was more of a formality.
What went into the decision to grant him parole?
You know, they weigh a series of factors, and they come up with a score, and that score is supposed to reflect the risk assessment as to whether he should be paroled. And after weighing those various factors, his risk level was low. So by all accounts, he should have been paroled with that low risk assessment. And that's exactly why I predicted weeks ago that I thought it was headed this direction, because, you know, for the most part, Mr. Simpson has been a model inmate. He's been doing good things and trying to help others make good decisions, and he's done what he's supposed to do.
He did say some things about how, you know, he's never had any problems. He's a good guy. He's always been a good guy. That seemed a little interesting, given his history.
Yes, and that did stand out to me as I was listening, because I don't think that is entirely accurate. You know, this is Mr. Simpson speaking, and he's giving an account of what he believes he has been in his life. And, you know, he hasn't had any significant convictions. I think there was an arrest for domestic violence during his marriage. But otherwise, he was not convicted of any serious crime. So in his mind, you know, he is a good guy.
I've heard some analysts talking about the fact that he really didn't seem remorseful for anything. Did you get that impression?
I did get that impression. And I think the most important part of an inmate at a parole hearing is to express contrition and remorse and to tell the board that you have learned from your mistakes and it won't happen again. That was glaringly absent. And again, I think that was one of the problems that a lot of people noticed, was that in his wordiness, he was making excuses rather than expressing remorse. So, but, you know, it all ended up well for him. He still got paroled.
Right. So what is the American fascination with O.J. Simpson?
You know, I think it's the fame, and it's the you know, crash and burn of somebody that was so idolized and really on a pedestal for many, many years. You know, he grew up in a rough part of town, and he made a name for himself, and he was a notable athlete, and he won the Heisman, and he, you know, led his teams, you know, to victory.
That's Los Angeles criminal defense attorney Lisa Hooley speaking with my colleague Lori London. This is VOA's International Edition. Glad you're here with us. Grammy Award-winning American rock band Imagine Dragons is wrapping up the European leg of its current tour before heading to North America. VOA's David Byrd reports the group's third album, Evolve, has the band coming from a different place mentally and spiritually.
The members of Imagine Dragons say Evolve came out of a new mental attitude they found after taking a break from a grueling tour schedule. Group co-founder Dan Reynolds says that the break allowed him to refocus on the things and the people that matter most to him.
For myself, I was in a really just scattered, depressed headspace, and I think it just came from losing my sense of self almost to a degree, and all the abrupt changes. And I had dealt with depression when I was young, but it really took on a whole new level and was kind of a full year. So it was out of necessity. Long story short, it was out of necessity more than even, I think, wanting or anything. It was just, we knew it was necessary to go home.
Guitarist Wayne Sermon says the touring, a seven-year stretch, took a toll, but things are better now.
I mean, the road can be a grind, you know. It feels a little bit like a traveling circus. You know, you wake up and you're underground. You have no idea what city you're in. You think you have an idea of what region you're in, and you make your guess from there. But it can be a grind, but I think you do have to put yourself in the headspace.
The time off allowed Dan Reynolds to reconnect with his 4-year-old daughter, and he and his wife had twins. Reynolds says that when they were ready to work on Evolve, they hired Swedish producers Mattman and Robin, who have worked with Britney Spears, Tove Lo, and DNCE.
We started the record working with two Swedish producers, Mattman and Robin, and the reason we chose them, we tried a lot of different producers. The reason we chose them is they were both very opinionated, and they were both very minimalistic. Thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder. Thunder. Feel the
thunder. Lightning and the thunder. Thunder, thunder. Dan Reynolds says Evolve is the first album that all members of the group have agreed is a good one and one they can be proud of. The band starts the North American leg of its current tour in Toronto, Canada, July 29th. Wayne Sermon says they are looking at touring with a fresh perspective.
For us, it's just a matter of sacrificing a certain amount of things in order for 2 hours of your life to be the ultimate high. Like, there's nothing better. Like, cliff jumping isn't as exciting to me as the idea of going on stage and playing for people that, you know, got a babysitter, fought traffic, you know, paid for the extra for parking, and, you know, showed up.
Imagine Dragons Evolve is in stores and available online now. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
All right, David, thank you very much. And I'm Philip Alexiou here in Washington. You've been listening to International Edition. Listen, you can find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and you can follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Iranian authorities have reportedly sentenced another American citizen to a 10-year prison term on charges of espionage. A spokesman for Iran's judiciary, Gholam Hossein Mohseini Ejehi, made the announcement on July 16th. The Iranian judiciary's news site, Mizan, later identified the American as Shiwei Wang, a Princeton University graduate student who was born in Beijing. Princeton University said the student had been doing historical research for his doctoral dissertation about Iran's late Qajar dynasty and that he had been arrested months ago. The imprisonment and conviction of U.S. citizens and other foreign nationals falsely accused of crimes against national security have been an ongoing and dangerous trend in Iran. Despite hopes that the nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, agreed to by Iran, the EU, and the P5+1 countries in 2015, would induce Iran to become a more responsible member of the international community, Iran has continued to engage in malign activity, including the arrest and imprisonment of U.S. citizens and other foreign nationals. In 2016, Iranian-American businessman Siamak Namazi was sentenced to 10 years in prison for espionage. His 80-year-old Iranian-American father, Bakr, who had traveled to Iran to help his son after his arrest, was also sentenced to 10 years for the same crime. More victims of such unlawful behavior include Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, an Iranian-British national who worked for the charitable arm of Thomson Reuters and was sentenced to 5 years for purported security crimes, as well as free and open internet advocate Nizar Zaka, a Lebanese national and U.S. permanent resident, sentenced to prison for 10 years. These U.S. citizens and foreign nationals held by Iran vehemently protest their innocence. According to U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley, detaining political prisoners is one of the worst human rights abuses a country can do. As she suggests, no country which engages in such behavior can have any credibility in the world. The United States calls on the Iranian government to release all individuals unjustly held in Iran, including U.S. citizens and foreign nationals, and allow them to reunite with their families.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.